Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined today by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. Over the weekend, the EU rubber-stamped Theresa May's withdrawal deal. Katie, how did it go?
Well, there was some fanfare. I don't know if the UK population really looking that much, but in general, it went fairly smoothly. There was about, I think, less than an hour of discussions on the day that she actually signed it off. And then everyone agreed with this deal. Theresa May gave a press conference. In her statement, she talked about the fact that, you know, the British people just want the government to get on with this. And she talked about, you know, what she sees as a big pro of her deal, so taking back control of borders. You also have Number 10 making the claim that it takes back control of law, you know, that it gets rid of the ECJ and it also allows trade. But I think those are much more widely disputed. So the focus really is on immigration in this. And in general, it did seem like the EU leaders stayed fairly on script. So we saw lots of, you know, the EU27 basically saying, this is the best Britain's going to get as a deal. It's not going to change. If you change leader, this deal is not going to change. And it's certainly not going to improve. Which I think is them trying to be helpful to Theresa May. But there was one person who went a little bit off script by the name of Emmanuel Macron. And we know the French being probably one of the kind of loudest voices against Britain's favour in these talks. They have seen many opportunities there and they've all wanted to show that Brexit cannot be successful. And Macron gave an interview in which he suggested that in any future trading agreement, so when the UK ends the transition period, it could go into the backstop agreement, which everyone loathes. It hopes not to do that because they hope to have negotiated a future trade agreement by that point. He suggested that in order for the UK to leave the backstop, they would have to agree to give the EU access to fishing waters. Now, that is a completely politically toxic issue and thing to say, because one of the big things that particularly the Scottish Tories are trying to say is good about this deal is that it gives back control of fisheries to the UK, and the UK could be an independent coastal state. And in the backstop agreement, that seems like it would be the case. But if, as Macron seemed to be implying, the only way the UK can get out of this UK-wide customs union is to agree to allow the EU access to fishing waters, that is a nightmare situation for many Tories.
Should we take it seriously at all, James, this claim? I mean, is it just like Spain and Gibraltar again, more political grandstanding, or is it actually an indication of what the EU would like?
It is political grandstanding, but I think what, as Katie said, what makes the claim so toxic is that Number 10 have been trying to say to people, look at this backstop. It's actually very uncomfortable for the European Union. It breaks up, you know, allows goods to move around fairly freely, but doesn't allow for the free movement of people. The level playing field provisions in here are quite shallow, so the EU won't want us in the backstop because that could give us an advantage. So when Macron says, but we can stick you in the backstop if you don't give us access to your fishing waters, it undercuts that argument, the idea that this backstop is deeply uncomfortable for the EU and the EU wouldn't want Britain in it for any period of time. I also think it is uncomfortable because Theresa May would have liked, you know, the church bells to ring on Sunday morning. She'd have liked a sense that here was a deal and that the country would have said, oh, brilliant, yeah, Let's get on with it, let's do it. There, as Katie said, it was anticlimactic. It didn't feel like that. And it's also hard to see where the momentum for this deal to get it through Parliament is coming from. And I think one of its big problems, talking to Tory MPs over the weekend and today, is that because it looks like it is going to lose, people don't see the point in supporting it or don't see the point in going the extra mile in supporting it. There's a kind of weird thing at Westminster, which is, you know, people have this sense of, oh, this isn't going to win, so I'm not a huge fan of it, so why should I bother to go out and try and sell it? And this is one of the biggest problems for Theresa May. I mean, she is trying to do all the selling herself. I wrote on Saturday about how Number 10 are so confident of her knowledge of the withdrawal agreement that they're considering challenging Jeremy Corbyn to a TV debate over it. You know, but they definitely do need something to change the narrative, because at the moment there is this sense that this defeat isn't going to pass Parliament, and that is likely to become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And that's why we are hearing from Number 10 that the strategy is basically Theresa May pitching it to the nation. If you look at the Prime Minister's schedule over the next 2 weeks, and the vote we're expecting is going to be on Wednesday, correct me when I go wrong, James, the 11th of December?
December 12th,
which is a Wednesday.
Which is Wednesday.
Also the time of the Spectator Christmas lunch, so it's great timing. If you look at her schedule ahead of this, it looks more like she is embarking on a general election campaign. than a bid to win MPs round. And that's partially because I think at this point there is a realisation that some MPs are so stubborn in their thinking on this, they're so hard to budge. Maybe the only way to really change opinion is to get constituents to basically be behind Theresa May, and that could, given that MPs are supposed to represent constituents, they could change their mind that way. But so, there is a slight conflict in the message here, because on one hand, Theresa May is saying everyone's so bored of Brexit, yeah, just vote for my deal, let's get it over the line. And the other, she's saying, I'm going to spend all my time talking about Brexit to the people who are bored of Brexit, who are then going to be so enthusiastic about the Brexit they're bored of that they're going to get in touch with their MPs and tell them to vote behind my deal. Mm. I think there are many reasons that the strategy has seemed not foolproof, and that is one of them.
I think this is right, as Katie said. There is a difference between the public thinking, oh, she has been determined, she's keeping at it, and that's quite impressive, and bothering to pick up the phone and ring your MP's office and say, I really hope that my MP is voting for this deal. That is the problem. I think one thing which is a cause for optimism for her, I was struck at the end of last week talking to a couple of cabinet ministers who've taken kind of soundings, that party members seem more enthusiastic about this deal than the MPs do. I don't think an MP who came round and said that they were going to vote for the deal would have a particular problem with their association. I mean, there is a sense of let's just get this done with. But at the moment, you know, the problem she's got is because the DUP are not voting for the deal, she starts this process behind the eight ball. And I thought you had a double blow to her on Sunday morning at the same time as the EU leaders were signing off this deal. One was Ian Duncan Smith, a former party leader, saying he will vote against this. That is a blow, because if Ian Duncan Smith is voting against it, who is kind of personally close to Theresa May, that takes the number of ERG rebels north of 20, at which point it becomes very difficult to get it over the line. And at the same time, you had Lisa Nandy, one of those Labour MPs for a Leave voting constituency, who had previously sounded kind of open to voting for the deal on the basis of let's just get this done, saying actually, because nobody likes it, I'm not going to back it. And I think this is one of the problems for this deal, is where is its support base? And that is the thing. Where is the thing that puts pressure on MPs in a Leave voting seat to vote for the deal? And I think that one of the things is it's become very easy for former Remain supporting MPs who represent Leave seats to say, oh, but I'm not going to vote for this because it's not Brexit. And look at all these people who used to run the Leave campaign saying it's not Brexit.
And Katie, speaking of the DUP, obviously it was their party conference over the weekend. What happened?
Well, there was more bad news for Theresa May. We saw the DUP, and I think it was expected, but they reiterated how much they don't like the deal. They reiterated that they don't like the backstop. Arlene Foster confirmed that the DUP would not just be abstaining on this, they would definitely be voting against it. Arlene Foster said that she might have to revisit the confidence and supply agreement full stop if this deal is voted through, which is a reminder that even if Theresa May somehow pulls off what seems like the impossible and gets this deal through, her problems will be far from over, and we could be facing an early election if the DUP do decide to pull the rug from the Conservatives' feet on this. And generally the message was that they can't get behind this. And you saw two attempts to woo the DUP from the Conservatives. On the Friday night you had Philip Hammond, I think given quite an unenviable task given the level of anger towards Theresa May and Number 10 over their decisions. He had to try and warm up a crowd.
And also not the most charismatic person they could have rolled out.
He tried to warm the crowd with some jokes, which again isn't the most obvious person to do that.
I did think the joke about the cabinet meeting was rather good though.
What was that? Yeah, so, what was the joke?
The joke reported, Stierpike had the joke, so correct me, somebody's written the article more carefully than I did. When I go wrong, which was that this conference he could see some people he knew, some old friends, and some people he'd never met before in his life, so it was a bit like a cabinet meeting these days.
Exactly, and he did commend the DUP negotiators too, suggesting that although there'd been tough negotiations on all sides, he expected the DUP had actually got the most from recent negotiations. So he got a few laughs, I'm told, by people in the room, and he did get probably the warmest applause he got was when he said that the DUP had to rally, that they couldn't let a Corbyn government come into place, and that still seemed to get some unity from the room. But the star act was Boris Johnson, who hit the conference on Saturday, and he was given a standing ovation before he even spoke. He gave a very long speech, which is on Steerpike, where he talked about how basically we need to junk the backstop, said that it was awful the way Northern Ireland be treated in this situation, and basically roused a lot of support and urged the DUP to stick with the Tories. Now, the cynic, perhaps you don't even need to be cynical, would suggest that perhaps what Boris Johnson was doing as a potential leadership candidate or rival to Theresa May was trying to show the DUP that you can get behind me even if you can't get behind Theresa May. So in the situation that whether this deal passes or doesn't pass and Theresa May has to exit, the DUP can't support her, there are other Conservative candidates who can keep this confidence supply agreement, which is with the party, not with Theresa May specifically, in place to their benefit.
And James, what happens next with the withdrawal agreement?
So, I mean, all eyes now are on this vote on December 12th. Now, I think Number 10 have got one way that they will try and sell it, which is, you know, the one, this is the only deal that offers certainty. The only thing that you know what will happen next is if you vote for this deal. You know that if you vote for this deal, because the EU have agreed it, there will be a two-year transitional period. You know that that will happen. All the other options, you can't know what will happen. You could think that you're going to vote down the deal in the hope of getting a second referendum and remain. How do you know you're not going to trigger no deal Brexit by accident? You could vote this deal down because you'd rather have no deal, but how do you know? I can see, you can almost hear them saying this to members of EOG, but how do you know that that's not going to end up with either a second referendum or us being put into the EEA and a customs union, which is a far softer form of Brexit than those people want? So you'll see that that is the way Number 10 will try and sell this. But it's a difficult sell because you're essentially arguing, you know, this might not be great, but it's less bad than the alternatives. And also the other problem is people talk to each other. So if you say to Dominic Grieve, you might trigger no deal Brexit by accident, and you say to Jacob Rees-Mogg, you might end up in the EEA or with a second referendum, they will compare notes. And so the threats won't quite have the potency that they would have if people only heard it, but because they'll know that you're saying the opposite to other people.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And for more Brexit chat, why not join The Spectator as we host a discussion on the 5th of December called Brexit, the Final Deal. James and Katie will be there along with Fraser Nelson and former Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab. You can find out more details on spectator.co.uk/finaldeal.